Ulterior.
All right, what's up, everybody? So this is now day three of the 100 best songs of 2024 list, essentially the halfway point, because this installment is going to look at songs 60 to 41. And I would say that now we're getting into the territory where some of these songs at any given point in the time of making this list were in serious consideration for any spots ranging from like maybe top 30, top 25, and then even in a handful of cases, you're looking at nearly top 20 songs. So should be fun, should be exciting, and I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Number 60 is Never Has Become Always by Real Friends. There will be more chances in this series and the next series thereafter to really get more in-depth about this discussion, but I think the idea of switching vocalists is, you know, always met with maybe some resistance from fan bases, and it doesn't always work out for sure, but in the case of Real Friends, I think that it worked out even better than anybody could have expected it to, because you make the switch from Dan to Cody. And I'm not necessarily saying that Cody is a better vocalist than Dan, but I think that given the vision of Blue Hour, Cody was the absolute right person for that job. And it's easy for me to point to a song like Never Has Become Always and use this as an example of showing why I think Blue Hour is like so high into the sky as the best that Real Friends have ever sounded. Never Has Become Always is very energetic and fast-paced. It kind of channels back to like a 2000s post-hardcore style of music, a style that I don't think Real Friends, or rather, I didn't think Real Friends had it within them to be able to deliver this effectively, but not only did they do so, but they made, in my mind, one of the best songs of the year, is one of the most emotional, one of the most aggressive, and all in all, just one of those songs that I know will always kind of be at the forefront of my mind when I think about the year that Real Friends had in 2024. Number 59 is Fragments of a Dream by Bloom. Kind of mentioned this a little bit yesterday on the second part of this series when going over like what I believed the debut albums meant to this year, and I said all of that without even getting to Maybe in Another Life by Bloom, which I look at in essentially the highest of regards, not just like as a debut album, but just as an album that was really able to move me this year. And I think a big part of that movement came through Fragments of a Dream, which is a bit of a different kind of a song for Bloom and for this album, because it is largely carried by backup vocalist Jared, and his cleans are able to just like be somehow in like a weird way, like enchanting while kind of daunting. I guess it's like the slow build and the very ominous atmosphere that those sections of the song create. And then later on, you do get Jono coming in for the heavier sections, And it's the perfect balance in this sector of melodic hardcore that I think Bloom have become like juggernauts in by this point. And I think Fragments of a Dream speaks fucking volumes to that case. Number 58 is Cursed by the Requiem. Guess what? Another fucking debut album for me to gush over at some point soon, definitely. But I wanted to at least mention that because, again, I've been going on and on about the debut album, the debut release, or whatever the fuck debut. A Cure to Poison the World by The Requiem. I'm just gonna say this now, like, point blank in my mind. There is no hesitation about me saying that it was the best debut release this year. And in totality of the scene, I would have to argue it as being one of the best debut albums in the history of this weird little corner of music that we all encompass for whatever fucking reason. What Cursed does, I think, slightly better than most of the songs on this record, and I say that acknowledging that I think every song here is fucking flawless. When you listen to The Requiem, I think it's pretty evident, like, what kind of a sound it is that they're going for, and you would turn to, like, 2000s, My Chemical Romance, The Used, AFI, like that kind of dramatic emo music. I think that is the ground that The Requiem have kind of etched themselves into. And when you hear Cursed, it's like, okay, I shouldn't say like this in like a general blanket statement. This is really just me speaking out loud and thinking. I sometimes wonder, like, is The Requiem doing this sound better than some of the bands who they've modeled the sound after? Because I hear Cursed and I hear how beautiful it sounds in the verses and that kind of like, you know, that building of the anticipation for the chorus to finally strike. And then when it does so, and you have the backing track mixed with Damien's vocals, and I think Damien truly is one of the best vocalists of the year for the scene. And for me, it's like you hear a song like Cursed and you hear how he's able to hit these notes and stretch out these lyrics to kind of like fit the tone of the song. He is a fucking star. I think the rest of The Requiem really like hold their own on Cursed extraordinarily well. And it was one of those songs that I was able to listen to this year and just kind of like put myself in a time capsule in a way and think like, I totally could have envisioned myself like in those years in like 2004, 2005, 2006, where I'm in my bedroom listening to, Three Cheers to Sweet Revenge or In Love and Death on a CD player. A Cure to Poison the World would have fit right in with all that. And I'm very happy to be able to, you know, gas up these songs and this album and this band and talk about them in the context of being one of my favorite things I was able to hear all of 2024. Number 57 is Oblivion by With Sails Ahead. I think that a core element and like a core reasoning of what it was about Oblivion that stood out to me as being the best song released by With Sails Ahead this year, not on Infinite Void, but just from this year altogether. Oblivion, I really enjoy how it's kind of like, or at least this is like the notion that I picked up in my mind hearing the song over and over and fucking over again since April. I like how it sounds like it's kind of like combating itself at certain points. And what I mean by that is you get to the chorus of Oblivion and the instrumentation is kind of just like all over the place, like a little bit chaotic, a little bit discombobulated in like the most charming of ways imaginable. And it's like Sierra could have like started like belting out her screams at any point in that chorus. Yet she's not just like singing cleanly. She's like kind of harmonizing also and kind of straining out the phrase of can't run from your oblivion while again, there's so much happening in the background. And it kind of creates this feeling within me of like some anxiety, but not anxiety in a bad way, just anxiety of like, I don't know how I'm supposed to be reacting to what is going on right now, because I have like this really soothing voice kind of telling me something a little bit daunting, can't run from your oblivion, while it sounds like literal oblivion happening in the background. I love those concepts within songs. I love a section that really challenges a listener like that. And I think when you mix that in with the rest of Oblivion and just how well structured the song is, how it's able to capture every brilliant essence of With Sails Ahead and their own identity, I thought Oblivion was just like the clear-cut standout of what it was With Sails Ahead did this year. And I say that about an album that I think had so many highs and honestly no lows. I truly look at Infinite Void now, it's a perfect record. I know I didn't give it a 10 when reviewing it, but that's, you know, something that will, in my head and vocally, be retconned without the ability to actually retcon it, and we'll talk about that later on. But regardless, my point is that With Sails Ahead is fucking awesome, and Oblivion is just as amazing. Number 56 is No Hard Feelings by Make Them Suffer. I alluded to this a little bit earlier when talking about Real Friends going from Dan to Cody, but the vocalist switch up, it's never easy. It's always challenging to get people on board with it. I think in the case of Make Them Suffer, though, it's a very different story given why A Book of Niles not in the band anymore. But they did bring in Alex Reed from Drown This City, and I was really, really looking for a song like No Hard Feelings to be on this self-titled album, because I wanted to understand, like, what does a Make Them Suffer song sound like with Alex kind of taking the reins on vocals. And I say that because I feel like the way that No Hard Feelings is structured and composed, it was meant to be like a showcase for Alex, because you do have Sean come in with his harsh vocals at different sectors of the song and intervals, but for the most part, it's Alex's amazing sounding voice that is kind of leading the way for this song that I would say is still right there in terms of the heaviness that I know Make Them Suffer fans look for. And she sounds like the perfect fit for this band and the perfect fit for this song. And like the expansion on the chorus the second time around, I think gives her like another, like a canvas in a way to really showcase what it is about her that is immensely fucking talented, and why she, again, in my mind, is the right person to be in that spot of this band, nearly at the forefront of it. And you know, sure, maybe it doesn't steer like so far into the direction of metalcore as like prior Make Them Suffer songs or even songs that are on this record, but for my money and what it is that I was really looking for out of this album, it's hard for me to deny No Hard Feelings as the best song by Make Them Suffer this year, and maybe ever. And that's just me speaking my mind. I'm not speaking for anybody else. I think No Hard Feelings has a real case for being my personal choice for the best Make Them Suffer song ever. Stumbled over my words again. Number 55 is Don't Reach for Me by Knocked Loose.
Sorry.
this was very clearly the year of Knocked Loose, and I don't know how anybody would be able to kind of dismiss that idea, given how much the band was able to rise this year without changing a single fucking thing about who they are or their approach to music or their sound or, you know, whatever else. This band delivered this year, and I think Don't Reach For Me is a good instance of why and what it was about their overall sound and delivery on You Won't Go Before You're Supposed To that really connected with people. Because Don't Reach For Me, it's got so many elements within it that I think are patented to Knocked Loose, and then even some that kind of like really channel the idea of Knocked Loose getting heavier and more ominous at moments where, you know, somebody could have argued during the rollout for the album that it could have been beneficial for their mainstream appeal to go into a less heavy direction, but clearly that's not the fucking case. You hear Don't Reach For Me and you hear how aggressive it is. You hear how far Brian is coming along as a vocalist and just his effortless ability to become one of the best screamers in the scene. There's a section like somewhere in the midpoint of Don't Reach For Me that kind of like scales back the instrumentation a little bit, and it's very like, in some ways, faint and minute, but it sounds like creepy. I'm not really sure how else to put it. It sounds like something out of like a horror game or a horror movie. It just like fits that atmosphere of what Knocked Loose was going for on this record really, really well. And Don't Reach For Me, in my eyes, became one of the like the biggest and brightest moments on Don't Reach For Me. And there were definitely more, and we will get to them. We definitely will. Number 54 is Heavy Is the Crown by Linkin Park. Today's gonna be the day you notice, 'cause I'm tired of explaining what the joke is. This is what you asked for. Heavy is the crown. Fire in the sunrise. Ashes raining down. Try to hold it in, but it keeps bleeding out. This is what you asked for. I believe that I express most of these sentiments when reviewing From Zero a couple weeks ago, so I might not be like too in-depth or waffling or whatever with this entry, but what I will reiterate is that when I first heard Heavy as a Crown, I was able to like connect with it immediately, and I did like it. I would be lying if I said that I loved it, at least in comparison to The Emptiness Machine and then Over Each Other, which was a single thereafter. I just felt like Heavy as a Crown, it was a very good Linkin Park song, but maybe there was just like something, I don't know, something missing that I couldn't really grasp, and I don't know what it was, but later on in the singles rollout for From Zero, I just put on Heavy as a Crown one morning, and it was like this like euphoric moment where all of a sudden, for no real rhyme or reason, not apropos of anything, it clicked finally. And I know for a fact that another event that really like added on to my love for Heavy as a Crown came when the band played the song at Worlds this year, which is the League of Legends championship. And, well, actually, I forgot to mention this too. This song was already the official Worlds theme song, so the attention put on Heavy as a Crown was, like, kind of monumental, even for, you know, a Linkin Park song. But it was that performance at Worlds, and specifically the moment where Emily has that elongated scream, and, like, pyro goes off, and the trophy for Worlds starts to ascend from the stage. That was a moment where Heavy as the Crown like felt big time to me now, and getting to see and hear it be played in that atmosphere with this presentation in this setting with that grandiose production, I think that is where Heavy as the Crown like really started to elevate itself on my personal list of favorites. And now ultimately I'm here talking about it as one of, I believe, the best songs of the year. Number 53 is Lazy by Trash Boat. What if I just I feel like between this album, Heaven Can Wait, and then the prior one, My Trash Boat, Don't You Feel Amazing, the closing song on a Trash Boat record has kind of become like a destination for myself in some ways, because this is two consecutive records now where I'm of the belief that the closer on the album was the best. And it's for a lot of the same reasons as Maladaptive Daydreaming, which I believe on the 2021 list was actually, it might have been around the same placement now that I think about it. I have to go back and check the actual spot it was at. But anyways, I loved Maladaptive Daydreaming because of how scaled back it was in comparison to the rest of the record, and how I believed that kind of a song in that setting with that tone is where I really got to hear and understand even further just how incredible of a vocalist Toby is. And I feel like that's the same case here with Lazy. And kind of maybe living up to the namesake of the song, it sounds like more dreadful in its delivery and cadence than anything else on Heaven Can Wait. It does sound like Toby's kind of just like letting his voice just linger on these melodies and the very soft instrumentation that supports his voice. And again, I feel like all of that is where Trash Boat has been able to really, really, really succeed with these two records. And it's like this overall weird effect where Lazy feels and sounds explosive while kind of being the exact opposite of that in how it was delivered. But nonetheless, the delivery has been able to stick with me for the past 2 months, and I would imagine it's going to stick with me for, you know, maybe the rest of my life, given how much I truly love Lazy. Number 52 is Two Steps Apart by Relica. So already in this series, I've talked about Killstar, The Cold World by Relica, and how I was genuinely surprised how quickly I was able to take to a lot of Relica songs this year, because that section of like prog metal, it's not really something that I'm interested in overtly, and I don't ever really seek out that kind of music. But Relica delivered that kind of music in a way where, like, I couldn't deny how catchy I found a lot of it to be. Two Steps Apart, though, I think that song is a lot more like my speed, per se. Like, it definitely has all of the prog elements that have made Relica, you know, an established name in that field. But I think there's also something about the instrumentation that's just, like, a little bit slower, not as, like, numeric, I guess, that it was a lot easier for me to sink my teeth into a song like Two Steps Apart rather than, you know, something else by a different band in the genre. I think it was another moment on this record where Monique was really able to emphasize how strong of a vocalist she is and how effortless it is for her to kind of carry a lot of these rhythmic sections into another stratosphere. Two Steps Apart, in my eyes, is very definitively the best song by Relica this year, and factoring in everything else I've been able to hear out of this band over the years, I look at Two Steps Apart as being the greatest achievement ever by Relica. Number 51 is Beyond the Pale by Immanence. I truly believe that Beyond the Pale is the best example of like peak Immanence, at least for what it is that I look for with this band, because Beyond the Pale, I think it's, maybe the best example off of the album The Black of Eminence being able to like be a ferocious metalcore band while mixing in the orchestral elements that have been able to make them stand out as unique, while also just being able to like carry out this amazingly catchy song with a chorus that is just like speaking to my ears and again, what it is that I really look for in this band. I also think that when you hear Beyond the Pale, it's like undeniable just how fucking excellent Eddie Berg is and how he really does exist in the limelight now as one of the absolute best vocalists in the entire scene, and at large how Eminence have been able to become one of the best bands in the scene, one of the most talked about, one of the most celebrated, one of the most unique. Any sort of like a positive spin I can put on the sound of Eminence and how they've been captivating audiences very heavily over the last few years, I think Beyond the Pale is a song that really speaks to all of that. Number 50 is Blue Reverie by Era. In a year where I was super, super fucking high on Ghost Atlas and everything that Jesse Cash was able to do with that project, getting a song like Blue Reverie on this Era record, I feel like that, like, I don't know, man, that was really special to me. That meant a lot to me. Just being able to hear a song in this tone and style through Era where Jesse is kind of able to allow his voice to morph the instrumentation and be like soothing while still having a lot of emotion poured into it throughout the verses and the chorus. And then I feel like later on, the song gets heavy, like at the exact moment where it was called for it to be done. And for JT to be able to come in, and after you get like this beautiful song, him just able to like lay down those screams and transform it into like a more patented Era song, and then return to Jesse leading the track thereafter, I thought Blue Reverie was like the perfect marriage between all of the ideas that I think have made Era successful and be revered in the scene. And that's why I look at Blue Reverie as being my favorite song by Era this year. And truthfully, I'm looking at maybe like top five ever in their discography, for myself at least. Number 49 is To Hear of War by Counterparts. When Counterparts Surprise dropped the EP Heaven Let Them Die a couple of weeks ago now at this point in the timeline, I think that it really like shook the foundation of the scene. That might be like a dramatic way to put it, but if you look at the reception to the EP and how clearly Counterparts feel like exuberant about the release, it's very easy to understand why people have latched on to Heaven Let Them Die in that way. And I feel like at least for what it was that I was like really invigorated by with that EP, To Hear of War was one of the like the brightest moments on the EP. And I say that about an EP that I think was just like littered with bright moments from start to finish all the way through. Something that I think people like really noticed right away about Heaven Let Them Die was how much heavier Counterparts sounded. And that's like kind of, at least like if you presented that to me before the EP release, I would think in my head like, that sounds like an impossible feat. How does Counterparts get even heavier? And then they did so, and To Hear of War, to me, is kind of like one of the centerpieces of that conversation, and a centerpiece to the EP and what it was about this overall sound and shift to something even heavier that I thought worked so well for Counterparts. And it retains everything about the band that I loved beforehand. It still sounds so like just brutal and pissed off, and given like what the context of the EP is, and even To Hear of War and how that all factors into Brandon's lyricism, it made for a really special listening experience on To Hear of War. Number 48 is Gloom by Being as an Ocean. I wholeheartedly believe that Gloom is one of the best songs ever to be released by Being as an Ocean. And I think it is like the perfect snapshot of what it is about this band over the last decade now, since Michael had joined, that I was able to like turn to and really make a case for why Being as an Ocean had one of the best duo vocalist dynamics going between Michael and Joel. And I say had because sometime after the album's release, I think even only maybe like 3 months now, 2 months, whatever it's been, we learned that Michael is leaving Being as an Ocean, and now it's just, as of now again, just Joel at the forefront of the band. And that's going to be really jarring to hear later on in the future. And it's going to shift a lot of what it is about Being as an Ocean that I loved. Not saying that I won't feel this way about the band again, but at least in the context of the present setting and understanding that Gloom is one of the final songs that I will ever hear by this band that has Michael in it, that actually like adds a lot to why Gloom has made it this far high up on the list, and why I feel like this like strange wave of emotions when hearing Gloom now. And I'm still always so taken aback by how well the dynamic between Michael and Joel has always worked. And if Gloom has to be like one of the send-off songs for that pairing, they really could not have struck any more gold than they did with Gloom. Number 47 is Wrong Again by Thousand Below. I think this has become like my favorite style of Thousand Below. That energy that they pour into their music whenever it's a lot more like emotionally focused, I guess is one way to phrase it. And how Wrong Again, it doesn't really like have this exuberant energy to it. It doesn't have that factor that, you know, we hear time and time again with Thousand Below songs. It fits into that softer side of the band where you really get to hear James just like belt out these lines and these cries in this instance of like, baby, you were wrong again, and how that kind of acts as like the crux of the song and what it is that it's going for. And I think whenever Thousand Below dive into that bag specifically, they are one of the best bands in the world, and one of the bands that like really captures my imagination and what it is about this year in music that I have loved, and how I've not been able to like have my mind wander immediately to Wrong Again when thinking about Thousand Below in the past few months. And not saying that it's my favorite song by them, because I do not think it is, at least I don't think so, but it's like at the forefront of my mind when I think about this band this year. And I think that's the mark of a really powerful and impactful song. Number 46 is The Center's Falling Out by Poppy. Potentially the most versatile figure in all of scene music today, doing her thing, doing the damn deal, and making a song like The Center's Falling Out that I think is very much so definitively the heaviest that Poppy has ever sounded thus far in her music career. And when I look at where this album is placed on, or rather where this song is placed on the album Negative Spaces, I think that its purpose as kind of being a song that you can counteract, say, like Crystallize or the title track or Halo with, The Center's Falling Out was a necessary and vital piece of the puzzle that makes up Negative Spaces. And I remember when I reviewed this album and I really focused in on this song a couple weeks ago, I said that it sounded like the sibling to Suffocate by Knock Loose, which does feature Poppy, and I still feel that way. But you know what else kind of has been able to, like, find its way into my train of thought whenever I hear The Center's Falling Out? Iowa era Slipknot. I get those vibes from the song. I get that, like, similar aggressive feeling and how just fucking, like, blistering the song sounds. And I think whatever it was that Poppy was really going for with The Center's Falling Out, whether it was Slipknot or Knocked Loose or anything else that I'm not mentioning by name right now, she fucking delivered on every possible front. Number 45 is It's Supposed to Hurt by House of Protection. This was the world premiere of House of Protection. This was the first time that any of us had been able to listen to the band and hear what it was that Arik and Steve had been working on with Jordan Fish, and the first real glimpse at like what this collaborative effort was going to be. And I think at the time of hearing It's Supposed to Hurt when it released, I love the song right away, but I think I might have still had like areas to really grow what it was about it that I was able to attach to. And I say that because when I look back at like the Scenic Overlook rankings for that week, I think It's Supposed to Hurt might have been like sixth or seventh. So I definitely looked at it favorably, but not as favorably as I do now. And I think that's just having, you know, given myself months to like really learn more about the sound and the ideas and the direction of House of Protection. And for all those reasons, I think It's Supposed to Hurt was like the perfect way to be like thrown into the deep end in a way with this band. And now I look at it as one of not only the best songs by this band on the EP Galore, but one of the best songs overall for the year. And if I look at like the individual work of Steve and Arik and even Jordan, I think it's one of the absolute highlights of any of their outlets and endeavors, at the very least over the last couple of years. Like, I think the drum and bass inspired rhythm in the way that the song is arranged, it's like very fitting for the styles and the tones that House of Protection really wanted to nail on the CP. And again, I think It's Supposed to Hurt was as like storybook of an opening for a project as anybody could imagine. Number 44 is A Dozen Roses by Amira El Fiki. When beauty only feels skin I would have to like double check this and make sure that this is a fact, which is why I'm not saying it as a factual statement right now. But I think that there is a possibility that A Dozen Roses is the only song in this 100 list that was not in Scenic Overlook. And I don't know what it was about listening to the song for the first time back in January that I wasn't connecting with, but like very quickly over time, and I think thanks in part to how much I saw the song go around TikTok, I felt like A Dozen Roses, at least for that time period, was inescapable, not by design. And then afterwards, the more that I listened to A Dozen Roses and the more drawn to Amira's style and her delivery that I became, it started to become, by design, my inability to escape A Dozen Roses because I didn't want to escape it anymore. I fucking love A Dozen Roses and how daunting it sounds, how defeated Amira sounds in any moment of the song, whether her voice is high or low. It fits the like the brooding atmosphere and the emo atmosphere so fucking well. And I think Amira is somebody who has put in the work this year to really grow her star and emphasize what it is about her potential and her capabilities. And I really believe that from 2025 onward, Amira is going to become somebody who kind of like takes the mantle for this style of C music and fucking runs with it. Number 43 is Dying to Let You Go by Inertia. I feel like I could gush over Second Shadow by Inertia so many times in this series and the next series about its effectiveness as a debut album. And I look at Dying to Let You Go as the song that I listened to in that initial like walkthrough of Second Shadow, and it clicked in my head right there and then how important this band and this album, and specifically in this case, this song, was going to be or mean to me throughout the rest of 2024. And now I would imagine that it's going to mean as much to me through the rest of my life. I think Dying to Let You Go, it captures everything about that style of metalcore to a fucking T, as far as like what it is about that genre that I think works and what it is about the genre that I look into. I think Dying to Let You Go has one of the best choruses of the entire year. And then even like in the later sections of the chorus, when you have like that vocal effect with Julian faintly saying behind the heavy instrumentation, "I still think about you, I can't breathe without you," and how that leads into the breakdown. And truthfully, it's one of my favorite breakdowns of the year. I think mixing together all of these elements for Dying to Let You Go, that's what makes like Inertia so special to me, and that's why I won't shut up about them, that's why I don't want to shut up about them, and that's why I feel like I am going to forever sing the praises of a song like Dying to Let You Go. Number 42 is Through the Threshold Beyond the Bend by Bloom. I spoke earlier on this episode about Bloom and how Fragments of a Dream was kind of like a song that we got to hear Jared lead the way on vocally and be a lot more emotional in its cadence and pacing. And I think Through the Threshold Beyond the Bend it steers more into the direction of really finding the balance between being like a melodic hardcore song and something more emotionally moving in that sense. And so having that dynamic between Jono and Jared, that's where Bloom, I think, is like really hitting their strides and finding a solid footing in the scene and becoming one of the standout voices in this side of melodic hardcore and metalcore and, you know, whatever label you want to stamp on what it is that they're doing. And then even through the heavy moments, you still have those really like tear-jerking, emphasizing sections. And I think this is the kind of song that really shows like what it is about Bloom that is working today and what it is that is going to be working about them in the future. And I have no doubt that when I look at Through the Threshold, Beyond the Band, and even Fragments of a Dream, and generally all of Maybe in Another Life, this is just the start of their legacy and everything it is that they're going to build for themselves and for all of us who get to enjoy that. Number 41 is Hell by The Home Team. I think this is one of the most fun songs of the entire year. Definitely one of the most fun off of The Crucible of Life when I look at that entire package. But I feel like Hell, I'm not going to say that it like really like shook the scene or anything to that extent when it released. But I think it was one of those songs that people who are already tapped into The Home Team, they like immediately turned their heads to, and it was like across the board in full agreement, like how fucking spectacular Hell is, how quirky it sounds, how much of a good time the music video was, and how it was the kind of song that like puts in front of you, in your face, every single thing about The Home Team that has made them a favorite for a lot of us. And it's a very short song. It's only like maybe 2 minutes or like slightly under, slightly more, somewhere in that range. But in that short duration, The Home Team packed everything that it is that makes them unique and fun into Hell, and in turn made it one of the most unique and fun songs of the year, not just from them, but from anybody for that matter. And that's it. That's songs 60 to 41. So we're beyond the halfway point of the list now. Tomorrow on Thursday will be songs 40 to 21. And this is where I would say that maybe my like explanation or like detailing of the songs starts to become a little bit stretched out, because now I'm going to have a little bit more to say about these tracks and why they might have like just barely missed the cusp of top 20. And then on Friday, it is the conclusion, songs 20 to 1, all leading up to me naming what is the ulterior 2024 song of the year. If you've been rocking with what I've been doing this whole week, then again, as always, I cannot thank you guys enough for any support, attention, and time, because I understand that what I'm doing this week is kind of asking a lot out of you guys, you know, essentially asking you guys to listen to me ramble for almost an hour from Monday through Thursday, and then maybe close to like 2 hours on Friday. But if you're actually, you know, dedicated to this and you actually do give a fuck about anything that I'm saying, you fucking rock. I don't know another way to phrase that, but that's just what I'm going to go with. Anyways, I'm going to get out of here now. Thank you guys so much, and I will talk to you guys on the fourth part. Thank you.